Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
We're going to lead off with Gabe Orthos with Central Georgia Health Network. Hey, Gabe.
Good morning.
How's that drive in? You got to experience Atlanta traffic firsthand, huh?
400 is a journey.
It's a journey. So tell us about Central Georgia Health Network. How are you serving folks?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the Chief Information Officer for Central Georgia Health Network. We're an organization that supports 1,100 providers in the Central Georgia region, which encompasses a large footprint of all the way from the perimeter down to Florida, essentially.
Wow.
So these are independent providers that are looking to transform their practices towards value-based care. These are providers that have been, practicing for a number of years and have been affiliated with Navison, which is the medical center down in Macon, Georgia. So we are proud to support them from an organization perspective. We do a lot of their contracting helping them towards the transformational changes that need to happen for our physicians in order to encompass these new payment models that are coming down from CMS and other payers in the industry.
So now, what is on the kind of roadmap? What kind of disruption can we expect moving forward?
I think that we are very similar to many other organizations concerning information, data, business intelligence. Our biggest impetus for transforming is, the high cost of healthcare. So there's a bunch of catalysts that are happening today around this data liquidity, big data, AI, all of these different kind of transforming technologies are starting to impact the healthcare space, primarily to solve the equation of higher quality, lower cost.
So now some of these organizations have been around a long time, and then it's hard to make change in
Absolutely.
These kind of large institutions. How do you help them make the change?
Yeah. So it's definitely a cultural, battle that we have to face on a daily basis. A lot of these hospital systems, not just in Georgia, but throughout the United States, have been ingrained in this whole idea of fee-for-service. So when you go to the doctor, there's specific codes that happen, and based on those codes that the doctor does on you, they'll get paid on. And then there's an adjudication process, and eventually the payer, whether that's a commercial payer like Aetna, Cigna, et cetera, Humana, or CMS for that matter, for Medicare, they will pay on those specific transactions, right? Where things are changing, and with the Obamacare kind of ACA model, we started to see more around quality and understanding the quality of care and understanding the cost of care. So you started hearing things, programs coming out of CMS and HHS around accountable care organizations, ACOs. So how do you transform? How do you move the ship when we've always done it this way type of mentality? And like in any other business, that's a very dangerous phrase to say. But to me, from an information and data perspective, is when you say things like, I don't know what I don't know, because that's even more complicated, right? Because if you don't know your business and where can you transform, you don't know where you're going. You don't know where you're steering your ship.
Well, when you have the healthcare system, when at one point the A stood for affordable, and now the A stands for accountable, those two words aren't really connected a lot of times.
They're not. I agree with that. I think that's a great point. Affordability is one thing, and is associated with cost and utilization. Accountability is based on how do we make the players in that system accountable for the patient population and the patient.
And for the results, right?
And for the results.
Because at one point, you got paid for effort.
Correct.
And now you're getting paid for results.
Correct. So, and the best way of really explaining that is how we define quality and quality measures. So think of NCQA, HEDIS types of measures. These are measures that have a numerator denominator that give you kind of a sense for what's happening with your populations in general. So there's performance measures that essentially say, here are the things that you were supposed to do, right? HbA1c, for example, is a hemoglobin type of lab that needs to happen for every diabetic. If you don't do that lab, right, you're not going to meet that measure. So that's performance-based. In other words, the payers are saying, you're supposed to do these things, you just haven't done them, mm-hmm. right? And then on the other side, there's a performance measure kind of thing. And the performance measure starts to really quantify, is the patient actually getting better? And that's more longitudinal, right? Because how do we define quality for a specific patient? Is really, do they actually get better?
But it's difficult because the patient has a lot of power in this. Because if the patient doesn't take their medicine or they aren't complying with the lifestyle changes that are needed, then they're not going to get better, no matter what the doctor does or what the healthcare system provides.
That's absolutely right on. I call that the inside the walls of my organizations, right? Patient presents, they open the door, they come into, and I know everything about that patient for about 15, 20 minutes that they're in front of me. But there's a lot more going on outside the walls of my organization, and I think that organizations like myself or clinical integrated networks are starting to realize that there's a much bigger footprint of where that care is being done and the modalities that are being done. And so I'll give you an example. My dad is a diabetic. He goes to CVS every day. So CVS sees my dad almost on a daily basis.
Than
more than the primary care, more than the care manager, right. More than the hospitalist, et cetera. So there are modalities of care that these patients are going to, and there are data being generated out of each one of these settings.
But then how does the healthcare provider kind of have accountability if the patient isn't compliant? How can the healthcare provider possibly be accountable?
Absolutely. I think it's a hard prop, and I think that CMS is starting to change that modality of giving 100% of that risk to the provider and saying, if you don't do these things, you will not get paid, right? Because that's a risk associated with that. I can't enact change on a payer, on a patient that's not going to comply, like you're saying, right? But I think things are changing from trying to, instead of giving the provider patient relationship, that one-to-one relationship, we're starting to see more of an end-to-one, right? So it's a network of providers, it's a network of modalities that are trying to enact change of that patient. At the end of the day, it's the patient's health, and it's the patient's whether they want to follow the certain rules of what we're putting in front of them. But the compliance, right, is starting to change with a program called Primary Care First. It just got introduced at HIMSS this year, at the beginning of the year, with CMS. This is a program that on 2020, we're starting to see new payment models and new kind of affiliated networks of truth as opposed to a single source of truth.
Mm-hmm. So now, for your network, how do you go about kind of serving this constituency because it's so large of a footprint, like you said?
Yeah. So we try not to boil the ocean, and I know that that's kind of a cliche of especially around data and analytics, but we try to optimize and have continual improvement on the low-hanging fruit of things that we know how to do, right? So, for example, annual wellness visits for Medicare, it's a proven touch point for patients. And so if we can increase that and not just get to the 80% and call it a day because that's what CMS wants us to do, but how do we get that 20 extra percent, right? And how do we finish? Because those are things that are very well documented, so we understand. Same thing with care gaps or same things with closing care gaps specifically around those process kind of quality measures. Those are things that could be done today, and we can improve year over year over those things. Eventually, we want to get to a much broader kind of population view, what I call the critical path, right? So that we are able to predict when a patient presents to the ED, any ED for that matter, not necessarily our hospital, but any hospital in the state, that we can put them through a critical path of lower cost, higher quality, right? What are the things that we can navigate that patient through so that we can guarantee a certain level of service for that patient.
Now, does that require all of kind of the healthcare providers to get on the same page and work together?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it is a transformational change that has to happen. So there's a lot of change management that is occurring right now in our industry. We have providers, and I call it kind of like a bell curve of these things, right? So the early adopters get it, right? That things are changing, payment models are changing. We have to change the way that we do healthcare in this country. On the other end, you may have providers that are like, fee-for-service is never going away. I will always get paid. We're on a fee schedule, et cetera. So, and somewhere in the middle, you'll have the majority of the providers kind of figuring out what's going on. So it is a change management.
What about in the kind of places that don't have the money to invest in this kind of massive change? Like, how do you accommodate them?
Yeah, I mean, it is a foundational investment that has to happen around technology.
But data, in some of the rural areas that don't maybe have as many resources, how do they get to participate?
Right, and our network is rural as well. So I think that in coming together into a network-based system where we can help each other, where you have a support mechanism from the network level that allows you to do small changes, transformational changes at the practice level, we're starting to see more and more regional organizations coming together in groups, many different types of organizations. There's IPAs, which is independent providers coming together. Then they may become a PHO, which they are actually aligned with a hospital. They may become a CIN, integration systems. So you're starting to see these organizations throughout the United States coming together. The individual provider by themselves in the middle of nowhere type of thing is becoming more of a rarity to see. We're starting to see also a lot of hospital systems coming in. Case in point, Atrium Healthcare, Carolina Health System, came and bought Navison. Right, so now you have the Carolinas, South Carolina, North Carolina, coming into the Georgia market. Right, we saw the same thing, the same idea of the Kaiser model in California, Philadelphia, New York. We've seen these kind of big system kind of collaborating, coming together.
And then, what about like things like telemedicine, where you can kind of virtually have a physician in some of these areas that maybe are underserved? Are you seeing more and more of that?
I think so. And I'm starting to see payment models that enable a provider to really get paid for those services. Mm-hmm. And understanding, if they're not going to be able to touch the patient, what are the things that they can do? There's a lot of stuff that from a patient-provider relationship cannot be done through telemedicine. So I think we're starting to carve out the things that make sense. I'm a Generation Xer. I use my telemedicine doctor. I don't necessarily need to have a relationship with that doctor,
right.
As long as he's available when he says he's going to be available, and he can, have a phone in front of him and kind of see me and have a conversation. I don't mind paying out of pocket for that, right? I don't mind paying a copay for that. I think it's generational also. You're starting to see a lot of the generations starting to do a lot more telemedicine. The things that really engage me or really have a big future for me is around mental and behavioral health, because that's something that we have a problem not only here in Georgia but throughout the United States on access. So more to come. I think that the payment model is going to drive that usability.
So now, what do you need more of right now? How can we help?
I need more time. I need more time. I think that all of these models are changing very rapidly. We are very, I call it kind of the schizophrenic reality of healthcare, where every month something else bubbles up to the top. So we try to focus on things that are important to us, things that are important to our network, to our providers, and how do we elevate them, right, so that they can practice medicine, which is what we need them to do, but at the same time be sustainable from a business perspective. And we forget that sometimes, right? All of these models are great, and we try to create a portfolio management of having different types of populations, whether it's Medicare, whether it's commercial, whether it's kids, et cetera. But really, right now, we're getting put in so many different situations and so many different things that it's hard to concentrate and focus on one population and getting them better, because everybody is important.
Right.
So it is a, all over the place type of thing.
So now, is there anything from, are you seeing any decline in talent, or more, are people choosing not to get involved in healthcare and being a doctor because of the complexity and all of the unknowns?
Yeah. So I am, shameless plug here, I am going to start teaching a population health management course at Georgia State University. Have been teaching at Sacred Heart University out of Connecticut, population health management. The master's program in Connecticut is more of a informatics type of thing. Here in Georgia is more of a public health. So we're starting to see the transformation of our students thinking about value-based care, which to me is very important for them to understand the business of healthcare, not just the epidemiology kind of academic exercise of of understanding populations, kind of the CDC way of looking at the world, right? I want them to look at it from the perspective of a payer, from a perspective of a technologist, from a perspective of a provider, from a perspective of a hospitalist, right? So having that totality of what you need. I'm starting to see changes in curriculum here in Georgia, especially. I've worked with Emory, and I work now with Georgia State, and I think it's important to teach our students that are coming out, whether they're going into the clinical space or they're going into the administration space, right, that they understand that it's not just anymore inside the walls of a hospital.
Now, but are you seeing a decline in the number? Are people saying, you know what, I thought I wanted to be a doctor, but it just seems like more trouble than it's worth. I got to invest all this time. There's all this change. I don't know what, you know, coming up down the road, how it's going to pay off. Mm-hmm. I have all this student debt.
Yeah, absolutely. From a clinical perspective here in Georgia, I think we've steadied our influx of MDs that are going in through those programs. More importantly for me, I'm starting to see more and more people getting to maybe be in a LPN or
physician
RN,
assistant.
Physician assistant.
So that exactly. There's more people kind of at that level. And that's those are a lot of times the boots on the ground that you need those people.
Correct. So from a team-based, support-based environment of these clinicians, not just the white lab coat, right, MD or DO or whatever it may be, now we're starting to see the support mechanism underneath them, and my network tries to provide support for them as well, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we create pre-visit planning so that they have the data, so that they have the things that they need to do for a specific patient beforehand, right? So when the provider sees the patient, they can just do 1, 2, 3 things as opposed to doing 150 tasks.
Right.
Happen.
So now, for you, who is your client? Is your client these hospitals? Are they the individual doctor? Who do you serve specifically?
I serve the providers. I serve the providers in the network. I elevate them every day. I try to elevate them every day from a data and technology perspective. We have clinical liaisons that go out to the practices and help them really kind of move the needle towards this transformational impact that has to happen from a workflow perspective. So it's not just a matter of giving them a report and saying, here's 150 patients that you haven't met your A1C for, but how do we help you, provider, in your workflow, in your EMR, to make sure that we are doing the things that you're supposed to, so that you can get credit, right? Mm-hmm. Not only get credit, but also get paid for those value-based incentives.
So then the outcome after working with you is that they make more money and are kind of not handling some of these administrative type headaches that are correct. Bogging down their practice?
Yes, that's correct.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
MyCGHN.com is our webpage. Follow us on Facebook as well as LinkedIn.
And then you're here in Central Georgia primarily right now. Do you see this going around the country, or is this, do you have enough to keep you busy here in Georgia?
I think our organization is very similar to other organizations in the state and throughout the country. We are becoming a much larger network because of Atrium Healthcare coming from the Carolinas. I think that our intent is to support our providers and become a bigger network if that's what, you know, what the board decides to do. From my perspective, you know, I'm just putting my head down and try to support the ones that I have
done,
right now.
Right? Exactly. That's enough to keep you busy. All right. One more time, the website?
MyCGHN.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
All right.